In auditoriums and gymnasiums all over town, kids on the cusp of adulthood walked to this song just weeks ago in graduation ceremonies called Commencement. They're called that because they're supposed to be the start of what comes next, not just the end of high school. But for some recent grads, what comes next is unclear and maybe a little scary, whether that's because of the price tag on a college education or any number of unknowns. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're starting off today's show on KCUR's Central Standard talking about what happens after graduation. Call 816-235-2888 to share what you're considering or what a recent grad you know may be wrestling with right now. As Yogi Berra once said, the future ain't what it used to be. So tell us what it looks like for today's high school grads. 816-235-2888. Neil Corriston is with us now. He's a counselor with the Center School District. Hi, Neil.
Good morning, Gina. How are you?
Good. So as of June, are there a lot of kids, to your knowledge, who are still kind of adrift, not sure what comes next?
I think there's definitely some anxiety on just maybe they kind of have a plan on what they know is going to come next, but still navigating those kind of uncharted waters for a lot of them. A lot of my students are first-generation college students, so there's a lot of anxiety in that.
And I do understand, I mean, I feel like I've heard that the summer between high school and college, especially for people who are kind of doing this without a lot of role models and yeah. without people who have experienced this process to guide them, that that can be a time when those plans fall apart.
Yeah, they call that the summer melt. That's the term for it. I think that a lot of students are, they're jazzed up. A lot of their friends have, committed to a college and they're starting to get their financial aid worked out. And then when it comes down to the summertime, any number of things can happen. Financial difficulties within the family. I mean, I'm coming from a school where there's very high poverty, but there's a lot of factors that can kind of stymie students' progress into college. But by and large, about 70% of our graduates attend a post-secondary education. So that's really good, even with that. The summer melt that everybody talks about.
What about those students who don't plan to go to college next? I mean, what are some of the options out there that are, that a lot of your students consider?
Yeah. Well, man, that is, the reality is that most, jobs are going to require some type of a career, right? I mean,
right.
I think a lot of my students and a lot of kids in Kansas City, they think they can land, the low level, summer jobs, high school employment jobs, food service, being a lifeguard, those types of jobs. But really, that's we don't want to see 24-year-olds taking orders at fast food. I mean, that's a high school position. So, and that's what our job as educators is to do, is to make sure that students and that's one of the big things is that high schools are doing these days is they're trying to get students some dual credit, try to get them what they call industry recognized credentials, which are entry level to some of those career fields, entry level certifications, so that students, if they plan to not attend college directly out, that they can access some of those entry level positions within actual career fields and make a higher wage, and that way that they can pay some of their finances or some of their financial obligations and go also. There's mentors within those systems, to help them, continue to pursue those next steps.
How long have you been doing this?
This is my sixth year as a counselor and ninth year in education.
Yeah. In the almost a decade that you've been working in education, have you seen the options themselves changing? I mean, it's not a long time, but change can happen fast.
Sure. I guess, yeah, college tuition is, you know, it is the it's the beast and that everybody has to, you know, to tackle, right? A lot of that is one of the things that obviously kids and students and families are very concerned about. It's risen, you know, like what, 215% in the last 20 years. And that's way, way above inflation. You know, for universities and for some of the, you know, some of these private colleges, the college cost is way out of, you know, I mean, honestly, the financial, risk for families is tough for them to take on.
I just want to talk to you about how you have those conversations with kids about, on the one hand, you're saying that a career that's going to support you.
Sure.
Is going to require more than a high school diploma. On the other hand, you're saying that the cost of going to college is skyrocketing and is out of reach for a lot of people. How do you have those conversations with 16, 17, 18-year-olds?
Yeah.
It must be pretty crushing.
Well, it's scary for them, definitely. You know, I mean, in high school, things are still, you know, hey, I wake up at... I may or may not wake up and get to class on time, but, you know, I'm here at school every day and I'm not having to worry about, also, you know, when I get into college, you know, I mean, kids change their minds in college too. And that can be a anxiety provoking thing is that, hey, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to start learning some of this stuff. And then I'm not going to be so interested in it anymore, which is why high schools are trying to make sure that students are exploring career paths and getting what they call like common core competencies and basically like soft skills training while they're in high school, so that when they go in so they're learning some skills that the workforce demands besides just content area, but then they're also able to study and get a little bit more in depth into content areas in high school.
So what about post-secondary education that isn't the four-year institution? I mean, the community college approach or the technical school or vocational school kind of training?
Yeah, we have great community college system here in Kansas City. Metropolitan community colleges are great. Johnson County Community College, they've actually give metro rates now to Kansas City students, so that's fantastic for some of our students that live out south in South Kansas City. They can go to Johnson County Community College for basically the same metro rate. But that, you know, as far as trade schools, we've had students that go to some of the, you know, the private trade schools, and that can be a good option for a few. However, our community colleges offer, trade certifications in pretty much every single area, save a couple things. But and then some of our unions and local, you know, the sheet metal workers union, local pipe fitters, some of these trades, they actually will pay for students once they're in the apprenticeship program to take classes through the Metropolitan Community System.
So. Do you worry that these kinds of opportunities aren't things that all kids know about? I mean, obviously, when you're advising kids, you're sharing this information. Do you worry that there are kids slipping through the cracks just because they don't know about the resources out there?
Yeah, well... It's tuning in, right? Sometimes I think that there's a lot of white noise out there, and we live in an age of procrastination. So, hey, you know, the last 3 months of my senior year, that's when I can get it all wrapped up. And really, you know, what school counselor's job is to through K-12 is to help prepare students in all different areas through, you know, personal and social situations, our academic, to help them with academic planning and to help them with career and college planning. So it is a systematic approach throughout school. And hopefully at some point, you know, students do kind of tune in on some of those things. And we have lots of different things with advisory. Most schools have some type of like a seminar an advisory, a homeroom that happens, you know, weekly or daily, where students, you know, they take different career interest surveys, they work on resumes, they work on college searches.
You know, I want to get to some of our callers in just a moment. We've got people calling us at 816-235-2888 about this next step after high school. But we started this conversation talking about students who maybe as of June, I mean, they graduated a couple weeks ago and do not necessarily know yet what's next. What are there still resources available to those students as far as guidance goes, or is it like you graduated from high school and you're on your own now?
Yeah, I can speak from my experience at Center High School is that, you know, I will help any student, whether they've 2 or 3 years ago, that they still call me up and, Mr. Corston, I need to fill out my FAFSA again. And I have been working with a few students. So, I mean, we never at Center, we never close the doors to our kids. So that's, I am a school counselor. I'm here to help, you know, students, whether they're in high school or beyond.
What motivates you in this work?
Just to make a difference.
A short answer.
Yeah.
I mean, and we did touch on this, but you were talking about the anxiety that these decisions can provoke. And I wonder about how people this age, how well equipped they are to be making decisions that can affect the rest of their lives under the duress of being anxious about the future and sometimes the very near future. And like you were saying, you know, there can be financial stresses
sure.
that are immediate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't anything that, I mean, students, you know, have been making that decision to go to college or to, you know, or into the workforce for, you know, for a long time. However, the risks, you know, have substantially increased. You know, most students in the early 80s and early 90s could, you know, could work a summer job and pay for their tuition. You know, some of the careers that are out there, they're just asking for students to, I mean, you know, kids don't work their way up anymore as much from what I've seen. Most kids, you know, they want kids that are, you know, ready to come into the workforce and that know their jobs and
will do those jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm going to take some calls. We've
sure.
got people ready to talk to us at 816-235-2888. I want to start with Kevin. Kevin is calling us from Peculiar. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi.
What's up, Kevin?
Hey, my thing was, I'm not a recent graduate. I graduated back in 2009. But
that's sort of recent.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Well, after I graduated high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do for a few years. And then I ended up going to a community college to get my commercial driver's license. And right now I drive semis for the past 5 years. And I just wanted to say that college is not always the best option for everyone or not even a necessity. Saying I drive semis on Monday through Friday, home every night, 10, 12-hour days. And I make more money than a lot of the people I know who have bachelor's degrees, who have in teaching and science, even in engineering. I know people who have masters in engineering that I make more money than them. And so I just wanted to say, like, if you don't want to go to college, look at getting your CDL or these other blue collar jobs, because it's not $100,000 in debt. I have zero debt. I enjoy my job. I get paid well. I'm able to support myself without having a college education. And truck drivers are needed desperately. Welders are another one that needed desperately. I know Kansas City Power and Light can't find enough welders right now. And they pay, once you get done with the schooling for that, and a lot of it's union, they pay you to go to school. And if you stay with the union for X amount of years, you don't have to pay back any of the debts for the schooling. And it's a $30 an hour job roughly starting out.
Well,
so college. Yeah
Kevin, hang on just a second while I get some response from our high school counselor, because Neil Corriston, I wonder if a student came to you and said exactly what Kevin's saying mm-hmm. right now, like, Mr. Corriston, I don't want to go to college, and here's why. What would you say back to that student?
Well, that is my job as a counselor, is to walk alongside a student, not to just shove them into college. That's not what school counselors do. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, he got a commercial driver's license. That is a certification. It is a an access point to those jobs. So, I mean, you could be a delivery driver at Pizza Hut, or you can get a CDL and you can work in trucking. And, you know, I'm so happy for this, you know, for Kevin. I'm
How
happy
would you
for
describe
you, man.
The difference between those two paths, the pizza delivery versus the CDL and become a trucker?
Sure. Well, I mean, one is a career and one, you know, a high school student in a Honda Accord can do. All right. I mean, being a trucker, you know, and driving those 18-wheelers, that ain't easy. People need special training for that. And that's the deal, is that you got to have some type of training beyond just, I've got my high school diploma, to really make the ends meet.
Well, Kevin, thank you for that call.
May I add one more thing real quick?
Sure. Yeah.
One thing too, is you talked about Pizza Hut deliveries and earlier in the show, fast food workers. The vast majority of fast food workers are adults. And I actually know a gentleman that's been delivering pizzas for Minsky's Pizza and the River Market for roughly 20 years. And it doesn't matter what your job is. It's if you get paid well, you're able to support yourself and you enjoy the job. Who cares what job you have? If it's fast food or if it's pizza or if it's a CEO, as long as you get respect, you enjoy the job and you're able to get paid a livable wage. That's the biggest thing. Who cares if you have a high school degree and you work at a pizza place for 20, 30 years, or if you're just in the fast food industry? In my opinion, and to see how I see it, it's a big disrespect to say that someone that is working in the fast food industry, that's a kind of a child's job, in my opinion, how I see it.
Well, Neil,
no disrespect. I'm not. Honest work is never. I would never ever disrespect somebody for working. That's just our job as educators, though, is to prepare students for jobs that. That high schoolers, typically,
can't get.
Yeah. So.
So I guess, though, when I asked you about the distinction between those two things, I guess I was wondering if long term, those opportunities for a livable wage, for example, are different on those two paths,
Can you say that one more time?
When we were talking about the trucker's license versus going and delivering pizza for the local pizza joint.
Yeah.
I guess I was kind of getting at, is the long-term prospect for how you can support yourself, is that different on those two paths?
Well, I mean, I think sure. I mean, there's more than just a livable wage, right? I mean, you're talking about retirement, insurance, saving for, if you're a single person, maybe you can make ends meet. If you have kids and a family, I don't know how much pizza delivery drivers can make, if they can support a family of four and have a house and a mortgage and the rising cost of our internet and our phones and all of the other things that we need in order to be happy or to feel, comfortable in life.
Let's talk to Keith in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. You're taking the K callers today.
Yes, exactly.
Good morning, Gina and Mr. Corson. Thanks for taking my call. And I was kind of looking more at the non-typical or non-traditional students, and I'm wondering what Center School District has done to create relationships with local businesses to also encourage the hiring of students with disabilities.
Yeah, two-part kind of question right there. As far as local businesses, that's something that, gosh, there's so many great people in Kansas City working to bring businesses in to help inform on teaching on some of the content that they're teaching and make it relevant, and also to provide mentorships and internships for kids. The Casey STEM Alliance is working with STEM Careers, and they are a huge link between industry and education. Prep KC is a nonprofit that works in our school, and they brought in different companies and to do mentorships with the state or State Street. So we have kids that go down and, you know, they get an up close and, in your face look at the financial industry. You know, right now, Cerner actually has some cohorts that they're working with to help kind of groom students in the IT fields, and not just IT, but also, you know, also just some of the other. I mean, Cerner's a huge corporation. There's lots of different, departments within that thing. So they're looking at, people that are interested in that and to see what kind of, where their talents lie within that.
What about part two of Keith's question about students with disabilities and their options at this juncture, this post-high school graduation moment?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, some of the higher education, colleges and universities, they do have some programs to help. With disabilities, there's you can't paint all with one brush. There are some students that are very high functioning. There's some with developmental disabilities. And there's some that have, some serious challenges. UMKC actually has a transportation institute, which we normally send a few of our students who have IEPs. That's something that we kind of advertise in some of our classes that, hey, there's and it's not just open, it's not just for our students with IEPs. But for any student in our school, but the Transportation Institute works with a lot of kids. And UMKC actually has a great program that looks at students who've been in special education, and so that they can be successful in their freshman year of college.
We're talking now about that decision of what comes next after high school. And I want to bring in Charlie Nutt. He's the executive director of the National Academic Advising Association. Hi, Charlie.
Good morning, Linda. How are you?
Good. So what we're hearing from Neil and our callers, just on that personal level, what's going into these decisions for people in Kansas City? Is what you're hearing pretty consistent with national trends?
Absolutely. I want to congratulate Mr. Corson for the great job he's doing at his institution, because he's doing exactly what needs to be done with students at the high school level. But it's very exciting to see nationally and also internationally, because we're an international association, and see this occurring across the world, but a much stronger connection between universities, colleges, and the school systems to really make that transition easier for students from high school into college. You know, regardless of whether a student is coming from a very high income family and, they have a long legacy of family who've gone to college, or if a student's a very first generation student, as I was when I went to college back in the 70s, all of those students need that help in that transition. And so the partnerships that are being built between universities, colleges, and the local school systems are so important, such as the one Mr. Corson talked about between Metropolitan Community College in Kansas City and the various school systems there, as well as Johnson County. We've got a particular advising community that's actually focused on helping and connecting with high school counselors and academic advisors who work together in developing programs so that, many students can have the opportunity, if they plan early, they can actually move into internships or move into, as Mr. Corson talked about, credentialing type of programs and graduate from both high school and a technical college or community college with a credential, college credential, whether it be an associate degree or certificate of some type, and go directly into the workforce, so they have the best of both avenues there. But the real issue, I think, is that transition into the college, of how different college is going to be from high school, and it takes that partnership between the universities and the colleges and academic advisors and faculty and the counselors and faculty and the school systems like Mr. Corson to really help students with that transition, because college is a totally different culture.
Well, what are the perils of that transition?
I think the pills are many cases, and there's a recent study that just came out this morning that was talked about in an Inside Higher Education publication of that first-generation students are no less committed and engaged with getting a college degree than a student whose family has gone to college for years. It's that I don't know the bureaucracy of what college is about. So I think the perils are, one, the financial piece, as Mr. Corson talked about, is huge. But I think the other is, how do I make that transition into what college is about? How do I understand how to navigate the bureaucracy of college? How do I make that connection with someone at the college or university who becomes my mentor, who becomes my, you know, scholarly advisor, who helps me through that process? Also, how can we begin to really connect more closely the universities, the community colleges, and high schools to really begin to help students much earlier than even in high school to begin to think about the financial realities of college and what that means? You know, how do you apply for federal financial aid? And even understanding that you may not be eligible for federal financial aid, but if you're going to even apply for any scholarships are available, you have to do that federal form first. And how do you work through that and build those partnerships, I think, is key to,
you know,
what we're looking at.
I'm going to jump in. Neil, you've been nodding vigorously.
Charlie, you're on it, man. Yeah. No, the FAFSA financial piece is huge.
Filling out the forms.
It's not just filling out one form. It's right. Filling out a form and then there's a verification process afterwards. So the initial FAFSA is just the first step. Pretty much every student is selected for verification afterwards, then they have to go get an IRS tax transcript, and there's hoops to jump through so that they can access that money.
But is your perception, Neil, that that the transition from high school to college, even for kids who have made the decision to go to college, who have found a way to get access to college, that is a problem area, that transition is not generally made smooth enough by the institutions themselves?
Any federal, money program is going to have lots of strings attached to it. It's not particularly difficult, but it is tedious, I guess. And there is lots of there is some disclosures of, people are very nervous about, giving out their social security number. Also, just exposing themselves to our government about, what they made last year. So that's a struggle sometimes with the students that I work with.
Let's talk to I'm going to go to a caller. We're going to talk to Casey in Roland Park. Hi, Casey.
Hi. Thanks a bunch for taking my call. Couple things I observed. I'm a parent of four kids. My two youngest went through the Shawnee Mission School District here, and the last of the bunch graduated this year. I know during the senior year, there's just an incredible amount of pressure for IB classes, AP classes, and, go to the college, and not much consideration is given to students who, are just as bright, just as successful, but may not want to do that. I know my daughter, her senior year, lots of pressure. Lots of, I don't know what I want to do. Why do I have to decide right this very moment what I'm going to do with the rest of my life? I'm so confused. I don't even know what to do. Overwhelmed. She's opting to go to Kansas City, Kansas Community College, which is, of course, one of the ones here in the area. We have a wonderful community college system. I can't say that enough. And
Absolutely.
She's going to do that. She's going to get her general studies out of the way for, a quarter of what it costs to take that same Comp 1,
yeah.
Comp 2 basic
Casey.
Math class at...
Thank you so much for calling, but we're running out of time, and I want to get some just general response from Charlie Nutt, community college as an option.
I spent 23 years teaching and advising at a community college prior to coming to NACADA, the Global Community of Academic Advising, so I very much believe in the mission and value of a community college. Not only does it help those students who need that initial transition, but it's also the place for the technical programs and for those types of venues. I just want to stress, as your caller just said, there is a lot of pressure on high school seniors. Mm. and the partnerships between university colleges and the high schools with counselors like Mr. Corson is so important to help those students with that huge pressure that's on them.
Charlie Nutt, thank you for joining us. And Neil Corriston of Central School District, thank you.
Thank you so much, Gina.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Next on KCUR's Central Standard, how music helps us learn to read. Our brains on music in just a minute. We're back. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. And here in Kansas City, there is a major citywide effort to improve literacy by having all kids up to speed on reading by the time they enter the third grade. Part of that movement involves a push for universal pre-K, but the Kansas City Public Library is also working on literacy with a summer program called Reading Rocks. It's tapping into a connection in the brain between music learning and literacy. And we were super curious about the science behind that connection, so we invited an expert to talk with us. Ellie Thompson is with us from the Auditory Neuroscience Institute at Northwestern in Chicago. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
So I am pretty sure that I only know the alphabet because of the ABC song. Like, if I am trying to figure out where something falls in alphabetical order, I kind of have to hum it. And
sure.
I guess I bring that up because it seems like the building blocks of literacy are kind of musical.
Oh, absolutely. I think that we think of the auditory system as kind of the gateway to learning language. And so your experience with sound and your experience learning sound through music can really strengthen your ability to acquire language and learn how to read.
So it seems like, though, people have understood that really intuitively for a long time, or else we wouldn't have an ABC song. But has there been like research making that understanding more sophisticated?
Yes, you bring up a good point. I think that anecdotally, we think of music as kind of being an access point to learning connections with language, and it gives you an ability to really acquire language in a way that is different if you didn't have music. But empirically, the way that we can study how music improves literacy and music changes the way that the brain functions is actually through neuroscience. And so what we have done is use different types of neuroscientific techniques to measure the brain's response and to see how music training impacts how well the brain receives and makes sense of sound.
How does it work?
Yeah, sure. So we have a technology that is basically electrophysiology. I like to explain it. It's similar to heart rate monitoring. So we use sensors that are called electrodes, and we measure the electrical activity of the brain in response to sound. And what we can do is we can see the neural response in response to a speech sound. So speech is a really rich stimulus that has a lot of information in it, and it kind of challenges the system. So we can see how well does the auditory system respond to sound, and we can see the connections of the extent of music training to kind of determine if that has had some impact on a kid's life and their brain function.
What did you find, or what have people found?
Sure. Yeah, we found a bunch of really interesting things. So our line of work has looked at both musicians from all across the spectrum. We've got classically trained musicians. We've got kids that are enrolled in community music programs. And what we see is that music does improve and enhance the way that the brain responds to speech. So this is measured through our technology, but we also see that the extent of music training and how well the brain does respond to speech is linked to reading performance and different aspects of language function.
Does it matter what kind of music you're talking about?
It doesn't matter the instrument per se. I think that we have seen that just grouping people into whether or not they are musicians versus whether they don't have experience with music, we see that there's a profound benefit for music training. But it doesn't matter. So in other words, it doesn't matter what instrument you play, but it does require an active engagement with sound. So in order to make these connections and to strengthen them, it really does require you to practice and to work closely with an instrument rather than just sitting and listening with your headphones.
So listening to music and playing music sort of prime the brain differently for other kinds of learning?
Sure, exactly. Yes, it's if you think about the auditory system, it is a it's actually a really plastic system, so it's trainable. And the benefits that you have as a musician is that you've really sharpened that network. And so to sharpen the network really requires engaging and practicing. It's like going to the gym. You really do need to lift weights in order to improve your muscles. You can't just
watch someone else doing it.
Watch someone else doing it. Yes.
But that's also interesting, just thinking about the physical piece of it, just that that we think of the things that improve our brain function as being things that you could just do inside your brain. So it's interesting that you have to make the physical movements, that that makes a difference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's in addition to the motor system, so actually strengthening a connection through repeated practice, there's also a lot of work to show that kind of the emotion of music and how engaged you are mentally, it does play a role too. So it's not just going through the motions, but there's research to show that kids that are engaged with music as they practice, if you practice and you enjoy practicing, that's going to have better benefits for your language acquisition, your brain response, compared to just kind of going through the motions. So there's definitely an emotional component as well.
You know, when I mean, I think this is pretty common, but when I read to myself, I hear the sentences in my mind, which is not just about the sounds of the words, which we tend to think of as being like a pretty important part of learning to read, as being able to sound out words, but it's also about the rhythm of speech. And I hear that rhythm in my mind whenever I'm reading. I'm wondering if that's a necessary component of reading. Do you need rhythm to read?
That's a great point. I think that there are a number of different ingredients in reading that are inherently musical. So we've got melodies, we've got rhythm, but I think that rhythm is certainly an aspect or an avenue to understand language and the complexities of language, but it's not necessarily like is not a requirement, and if you don't have it, you can't learn language. But we do see that people that are better at rhythm earlier on are actually more likely to become better readers earlier on. So we had a study with a bunch of three- and four-year-old kids, and the early aptitude in rhythm predicted how well they learned to read 3 or 4 years later. So I think that there's certainly a connection there, but in terms of rhythm being just one component of reading, I don't think that if you're bad at keeping a beat, that you're doomed in terms of learning to read.
How long, I mean, are the benefits of exposure to music and engagement with music, do they last? You talk about learning to read 3 or 4 years later. What about someone who might be coming to that learning later in life? Does that exposure to music still help?
Yes, that is a great question. And the answer is yes. So we had a study where we looked at older adults that actually had music training back in their childhood. So when they were, between the ages of 5 to 10, and just even a few years of music experience way back in the day, they demonstrated better and more enhanced and faster brain responses to sound, which doesn't kind of speak to the literacy connection, but we think of as kind of in terms of the assembly line, having a better response to sound, brain response can really set you up for success in terms of communication skills. And so the fact that even just a little bit of experience earlier in life had benefits down the line was a really interesting finding. And I think it just speaks to the positivity of what music can do for us and in our communication skills.
How do you see the education community using the information you're providing? Or is there sort of like a firewall there?
Oh, yeah. So I think that the education community has certainly used this research for kind of advocating for music in schools, advocating for art in schools, kind of taking the idea of STEM and making it STEAM,
including
the addition of art. Exactly. And I think that while we certainly want to emphasize music as a component of a curriculum, it really does require this science in order to back it up. And so it's nice that the anecdotal evidence is really supported here through the research that our lab has been able to do and different researchers across the country.
Ellie Thompson, hang out with us. When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll also hear stories from a local teacher about combining music and reading in the classroom. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're continuing our conversation about music and literacy with another Gina, Gina Posada, a teacher at United Inner City Services at the St. Mark's Center in Kansas City's 12th Street Corridor. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
So tell me about the kids you teach and your how literacy fits into your goals for them.
Well, I teach mostly inner city kids that are mostly low income, but we do have children that come from all over. And music is a very big part of our day. We use music throughout almost every transition throughout the day, whether it's going to the carpet, lining up, walking down the halls.
And how old are the kids we're talking about?
I have 3, 4, and 5-year-olds.
And so music is part of transitions within the day.
Yes, all day.
Is it part of literacy and reading readiness kinds of stuff?
Yes, we have a lot of learning songs that we like to use. So we use songs for ABCs, for rhyming. So a lot of times we'll have songs that they'll sit on the carpet and then they'll learn their letters. They have to sit and wait for their letter to come up. So we have a song and it's Who Let the Letters Out? So it's like, who let the A out? And so they get to jump up when their letter comes on, and it also teaches them how to sound out the word and all the phonetics.
So each kid gets a letter?
Yes. So they wait for their letter to come, and then they jump up, and then they also learn their other friend's letter. So they're like, oh, that's R, that's Robert's letter. So they'll remind their other friends, it's their turn.
How do you think that the kids, I mean, we just heard that being physically engaged with the music is part of how you get those learning benefits. Is that something that you just observe in watching the kids, not even needing to see the research?
Yeah, that's something that, because hearing the research behind it is very interesting, because that's something that they do anyway. So we do a lot of music and movement. So a lot of our songs have actions to go with the song. So there's a lot of crossing midlines and just a lot of getting their brain working.
Crossing midlines. Yes. This is a fascinating thing that until recently I did not know was a really big thing in childhood development and learning. But when you move your hand across your
left
body
to right,
to do something.
Right to left. Yeah. And I just kind of started learning about it a couple years ago, too. But it's just interesting to hear like the science behind it.
You know, Ellie, jump back in here. Is an activity that has a kind of movement that, for example, asks kids to cross the midline or to jump up when their letter is called. What is happening in the brain when kids are doing that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So I think that the crux of it is that it's making connections in the brain that are really a result of just your experience and exposure to new things. So we think of in neuroscience that the more complex and rich and unique of an environment that you can expose someone to can really produce a ton of benefits, whether it's auditory or visual or in any kind of domain. But when it comes to music, I think that you have this ability to understand language and learn in a way that is unique, and it kind of gives you this opportunity to make these new connections. And so I think in terms of the adorable song that I want to be a part of and want to hear, Who Let the Letters Out, I think that what I'm hearing is that allowing kids to express themselves and to move in ways that maybe they wouldn't just do normally or naturally is really providing a lot of benefits for their language and learning in the classroom.
Gina, when kids do struggle with reading, what are some of the challenges that tend to trip them up?
A lot of the times it's sounding out words. They might know the letters, but they might not understand that a C could be K or a K could be K. So that kind of gets confusing, or that CH is different, SH is different. So that kind of gets them jumbled up. But if they can see that or get used to it through a song, then it just kind of helps them to be able to remember to revert back to that and say, oh, yeah, I remember CH is different.
So you've seen music helping with that particular challenge.
Yes.
Can you I hear that you're a good singer, and I wonder if you can tell it, give us an example of a song that would do that.
Well, there's kind of an old R&B song that it's Aaliyah, and one of my little girls in my classroom, her name was Leah. So in the song, they spell out L-I-Y-A-H. So that's how she spelled her name. So that's how she got to remember how to spell the letters in her name. She would just think about it and say L-I-Y-A-H. And so then she was able to start spelling it and writing it out that way.
That's cool. And then, like, with that C-H or those other mm-hmm. kinds of tricks, there are songs that help kids with those really common challenges?
Yes, we do a lot of, like, leapfrog songs. And then we use a lot of YouTube videos. And we have Dr. Jean, who's really big in the early education community.
Who is that?
She's a singer, but she has a lot of, like, silly kind of songs. She has many CDs out, but she's been around for a very long time, but she's very popular in the early education community.
And you were talking about using music for transitions in the classroom. I wonder if part of the way that's working is that music can just get kids' attention.
It does. It really does. We have a cleanup song, so they know we give them a countdown. We have 1 minute left, so they know once the cleanup song comes on, they know to drop everything. Let's start cleaning up. And by the end of the song, they know that they should all be on the carpet getting ready for the next activity.
Ellie, what can you tell us about this? I mean, I know that our focus right now is on how music helps with literacy, but what about other kinds of learning and just keeping young people engaged in the process of learning?
Oh yeah. So one point of the music research is looking at how music can be used as a therapy for different types of learning and language disorders. So one deficit that could lead to a reading disorder such as dyslexia is actually auditory difficulty processing auditory sounds. And so the music training really does provide an opportunity to kind of, as a therapy, improve and strengthen connections in the brain with how to learn sounds and how to map them to letters. But then there's also a component of attention and how really engaging in a musical instrument can captivate you. And it is really therapeutic for kids that have difficulty with distraction. And so that's something that's really cool about therapy with music, is that it has these different opportunities to kind of capitalize on networks within the brain and use them for good that are just naturally engaged through music.
How does this process work differently depending on your age? I mean, I'm thinking about that you hear a lot about little kids are just that their brains are like sponges, and, you know, that they can just pick up a language. You know, you plop a kid down in a place and they're speaking the language, you know, practically immediately or something. And that with adults, that becomes harder. Is music something that continues to have this effect in the same way? Or are we really specifically talking about kids' brains?
Yeah, I think that the earlier in life that you can get engaged in anything, the more plastic the system is, the more malleable. And I think that you can really see that there are greater benefits for early music training, but in the sense that you can still teach an old dog new tricks, I think that it's not the case that after a certain age, you can't learn music and you can't receive the benefits from music. So we've seen some work that older adults that do learn how to play an instrument in old age are not only able to learn an instrument, but also that those benefits kind of transcend the way that the brain processes sound as well as their communication skills. So I think that age certainly plays a role in that earlier on is maybe you have more of an advantage, but it's not the case that it's limited to early childhood.
Gina, you have been so great in teaching us Who Let the Letters Out. Do you have a final song to leave us with that we can all improve our brains with?
I could do some more of that one.
Yeah.
It says, who let the A out? Who let the B out?
I'm going to be rocking out to that all day. Thank you. Gina Posada, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gina is a teacher at United Inner City Services here in Kansas City. And Ellie, thank you too.
Yes, thank you.
You can grab either of this morning's conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. We're going to have them ready for you by the end of the day. It's kcur.org/centralstandard. We've been talking about how music helps us learn to read, but we also spoke earlier about next steps for recent high school grads. Tomorrow, for all our talk about plant-based diets, we still eat a lot of meat in this country. In fact, according to the numbers, we actually eat more meat than ever. How's that playing out here in cattle country? That conversation tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and we get lots of help from intern Trevor Hook. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Stay tuned.